Blog Talk Radio.
No education, just get on board.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Sponsored by the TBI. Survivors Network at TBISM.com.
The only survivor and family network in the world. Two shows daily at 5 and 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 and 10 p.m. Eastern.
Found on BrainInjuryRadio.org.
And now it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. This is your host, Kim Justice, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. Hope you're finally getting to enjoy some spring weather in your neck of the woods. I know winter did not want to let go around here, that's for sure. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest like tonight. Others will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic and some great indie music sure to inspire. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. I'd like to thank Brain Injury Radio sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, and also my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. I encourage you, their spring edition, let's see, it was a year ago April, they launched their magazine, Brain Injury Journey, and you can find their website at lapublishing.com, and when you go to that site, you'll see that all they publish is brain injury-related material, whether it's for the survivor, the family, the caregiver, neuroprofessionals, or any other interested parties, a big section for the veterans as well. But you'll see on the left, Brain Injury Journey. And if you click on that, it will take you to the subscription page for their magazine, Brain Injury Journey. And you can either pay, pardon me, I got a frog tonight, to have a hard copy sent to your home. Or if you scroll down, you'll see a place that says, sign up here for free, can't beat the price, online version of the magazine. And there is just a wealth of helpful information in that magazine, and I encourage you to sign up. Their spring edition just got released, hot off the press. In fact, so hot off the press, I didn't get the picture of it scrolling across tonight, but it is out there, and you're also able to get copies of past issues. So let's see. Tonight, I was going to read you a couple other announcements, but my guest is on East Coast time, and that's always tough. Tough for anybody to be up this late starting a show on the East Coast. So I think I'm going to get right to Rick tonight. Rick Von Linso, MS, CPC, suffered an alcohol and drug-related brain injury in 1998. He was confined to a wheelchair in a nursing home. He made the decision not to allow his injury to define him. Through hard work and determination, Rick was able to overcome the physical limitations and achieve many successes in his personal and professional life, and is now a recovery life coach. Connect with Rick, read more about his story, and like his Facebook page at www.facebook.com/ Rejuvenate Life Coaching, or visit his website at www.rejuvenatelifecoaching.com. And I will type those in the chat room in just a little bit, and we'll be repeating that information through the show. But for now, I would like to bring Rick on. Are you with me, Rick?
Yes, Kim. Can you hear me?
I can. I can hear you loud and clear, and your Skype worked great.
Good, good.
Well, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well. I have two computers going here, so let me get one shut off so I can give you full attention.
Oh, I always want that.
Okay. I am completely here with you tonight and ready to walk with you through this journey of this talk show we're doing tonight.
Good. Well, and I'm glad to have you. You know, I've talked before on the show about addictions being such a danger on every end of a brain injury. Many brain injuries, as you know and will tell us about, are caused by addictions and use of substance abuse, and others go on and self-medicate after they've had an injury because they find it hard to accept or don't get the proper help that they need, and then find it hard to accept and easier to deny the fact that they're going to have to maybe substantially change their lives depending on the case. And if it isn't that type of self-medicating, sometimes it's just pain, even if it's the physical pain or the emotional pain that cause people to misuse prescribed medications. And so it seems to me, after sitting here as a host for a couple of years, that addictions are woven through the topic of brain injury. And when I first saw you, just so the audience knows, when I first discovered Rick, I was looking through some of the groups on Facebook, and I came across addictions and TBI survivors, and I was doing some reading on his page, and I'm trying to find the page I was at it's called cleanandsobervoice.com. That's the website. In any case, we'll talk about your Facebook page, but I found your Facebook page, and there was a place that people were talking about, and you shared your story, which you will tonight with the audience, about just how devastating addictive disorders can be and the kind of things that can come in back of it, such as brain injuries. So I thought what I'd do with you is just kind of have you start at the beginning, like I do with most of the guests, tell a little bit about your background and what was going on in your life just prior, or what kind of plans, lifestyle, any kind of background you'd like to give us before the event that changed your life, which is normally your intro to brain injury.
Yes. I started at a very young age of drinking. By age 13, I was drinking alcohol pretty heavily, and that transitioned into drugs. By age 16, I was using cocaine and mixing it with alcohol, and I just kept using drugs, and I needed more and more. The tolerance built, and by the age of 18, I was living in a crack house selling drugs to support my own habit.
Wow. Wow, tough road, and you got going on it early, and that's very, very easy to do. I'd like to ask your opinion on something. Last week I had a guest, and I kind of put you guys a little back-to-back, and incidentally his name was Rick, a different fellow, but he was talking about medicinal cannabis last week. And there was some discussion about that old argument of it being a gateway drug, and I just, this is kind of an aside from your story, but asking your opinion since you were so involved in the alcohol and drug culture, my comment was that to me, alcohol is more the gateway drug. I don't know a lot of people who have just, the first thing they ever did was pick up a joint. It's usually sneaking some alcohol from their parents' alcohol cabinet or getting some from somebody's big brother or big sister or some such thing. How did you get started?
You're right. When I was 12, my parents got a divorce, and one of my parents moved away to another state, and my other parent had to support me by working a couple jobs, and so I was all alone, and I found the kids down the street to be there for me more than anyone else, and they were a little bit older, and they had alcohol and knew where to get it, and that's pretty much how I started. I started with the alcohol just every so often, and then you were right, the marijuana came next, and I seemed to need more, and I just kept going, and next thing I know, cocaine was there.
Right. Well, that seems to be the, when a person has a genetic predisposition to an addictive disorder, I think that's what happens, is that it escalates if they're an addict. Now, this guy last week who was talking about the medicinal cannabis wasn't like a Cheech Marin kind of guy. He's a veteran, and he's suggesting a dosed type, just like you would dose any kind of medication, and the dosage is not one that would make someone high. It's very heavily regulated, what he was proposing. And so, again, like with any medication, though, and I'm not going to say one way or another, I'm not going to judge that, and then we're just going to move on into your story, but the rest of your story, but you know, anything that has a tendency to trip somebody's addictive switch, if they have one, if they happen to have that marker in them, can potentially be dangerous, can be playing with fire. So if you give somebody who's got a predisposition toward an addictive disorder a kind of medication, whether it's medicinal cannabis or the OxyContin for pain or whatever it is, in a perfect world with someone who doesn't have an addiction, you know, they look at the instructions and they follow them to the letter and have fear about what would happen if they didn't. The addict, on the other hand, reads the instructions and says, well, if two is good, six is better, you know, and that addiction switch just kind of gets tripped, whether it's, you know, the alcohol or legal or illegal cannabis or the cocaine, like you mentioned, or the whole myriad of drugs that are still going on now. They've switched, I guess the popular ones these days have switched, but I remember the days when cocaine was the next step of escalation, I guess you would say, for somebody who was, in fact, an addict, who went beyond just the drinking and into the realm of the drugs as well. And that really starts warping the thinking, doesn't it?
Yes. It's hard to get out of the negative thought process once you start doing that. When I was doing the alcohol and marijuana, there was an escalation before the cocaine. There was, of course, some speed pills came in and, mushrooms, just things, LSD, anything like that. I would try all of it. And then when I finally hit the drug that gave me what I needed, which I ended up with cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Not uncommon back in that particular time period at all. And I think you bring up another point. People with addictive disorders are often, as I mentioned, show no fear. It's more chasing after a feeling, which I observe later on has to do with filling a void of some kind. But you just keep going without thinking of consequences. More instead of focusing on consequences or the negative, you're just planning your next high, you know, planning the next time you'll be able to score or use or who you're going to be doing it with. And the whole thought process diverts itself from a time, if there ever was a time, when the wires weren't crossed, you know what I mean? When you start as young as you did, it sounds like, you know, and the reason a person is an addict or alcoholic is because they're born with the gene. But I think one of the things that can trip the switch is, you know, something devastating happening, like, you know, your parents' divorce at your young age and your family getting torn apart. If you had that gene laying dormant and maybe were just doing a little experimenting, I think that devil may care attitude really hit you hard with the loss of your family structure. But I'm not a psychologist. That's just an educated guess from being around the rodeo for a few years, I guess. But so you had become quite a partier, risk taker, who had tried just about anything anyone put in front of you, and at a point were doing predominantly the cocaine that gave you the feeling that you were craving at the time, and then what happened?
Well, after 18, when I was living in the crack house, I ran across country to get away from that life. And as soon as I got to the other state that I moved to, trouble followed me, and I got in trouble for a road rage incident that hurt another motorist. And so I was in trouble, and then I fell right back into the same routine of the alcohol and drugs on pretty much a daily basis. And so I made it. I spent a little bit of time in jail at 18, and then by 20 and 21, I had some rough times. I was really going downhill, and then I hit 22, and I was out partying with some friends one night, and I went home after the club, and my apartment was in a valley in Arizona, and I wasn't done partying, and I tried walking up the hill that surrounded my apartment complex, and I blacked out and fell to the bottom and smashed my head on the pavement below, and suffered a traumatic brain injury. Luckily, a guy that was going to work the next morning found me. I was rushed to the hospital, and I had a right frontal craniotomy and was in a coma for several weeks.
Wow. Well, I know that was no fun. I also had that procedure done, and was 11 days in a coma. Sounds like you were under a lot longer, but were you, when you woke up after weeks, I imagine if you were anything like me, you know, it was like, what the heck happened? You wake up and find yourself in the hospital and find out that I affectionately call it a zipper head, in my own case, and wonder what in the heck happened. Now, yours happened in a blackout. Mine just happened. A regular day, I was going about my daily routine, and I wasn't loaded. And my brain, my aneurysm just ruptured, and I needed to have that procedure. So after you've blacked out, taken this terrible fall, bouncing down the hill over the embankment and banging your head on the pavement, yes, thank God that passerby was there to be able to get you help, get you to hopefully a level one trauma hospital. But what do you remember, if anything? And I know a lot of people that tell their stories at this point, or at least this little portion of it, it isn't so much because they remember, because a lot of us don't. Things were pretty foggy at the time, and we got some of it filled in by friends and family. But what's the first thing that you remember?
The last thing I remember before the accident was being at the club with my friends. The first thing after the accident, what I remember is waking up in a nursing home surrounded by many people that were 2, 3, and 4 times older than I was at the young age of 22. I do not remember the hospital at all. I was still in a fog. Even though I woke up from my coma, I was still in a fog. So the first thing I really remember is being in a nursing home.
Wow. So your damage was, the injury that you suffered was to an extent that it wasn't going to be a hospital stay and a release. You were going to need to go on into the nursing home. That's another thing I think is sad. I hear a lot of the time is that the long-term care facilities, you know, are filled with 70 and 80-year-olds, and you put somebody in their early 20s into that situation, especially to wake up in that situation. And it's got to be just terribly shocking, as much so as the brain injury itself. But so apparently, even though you were in a fog when you were in the hospital and came out of a coma, there wasn't an effective treatment that would allow you to just go home. For example, tell a little bit about the injuries aside from or in conjunction with, because I did read it, and I don't know if the fact that you were in a wheelchair had to do with the brain injury itself, or if you had other related injuries from your fall. How did that work?
We'll go back to when I first woke up. The only way I can describe it is it felt like I was in a time capsule, frozen. My muscles wouldn't work. My legs and my arms were pretty much had atrophied, and the muscles would not work. And so every time I moved or done anything or someone touched me, I felt like I was in pain and it hurt. And so basically I started all over again. It was like being a baby and just starting to learn to do everything over again.
Now, could you talk? I know you couldn't walk and you didn't have mobility in your arms right away. Were you able to talk?
At first, they said the first thing I did was make sounds. And I could make sounds and make out, you know, simple words, but really people couldn't understand what I was saying, and which made me more frustrated. And so I was yelling constantly, trying to get people to understand what I'm saying. And that just turned into a routine of mine. I felt like, well, now I have to listen to what I'm saying. I can just do it all the time, and then they'll just stay away from me.
So you were very frustrated and exhibited it in anger then?
Yes. I didn't understand why I was where I was at. I didn't fit in the place I was. The only activity that was the highlight of my day was bingo. And at 22 years old, we're not looking for bingo. So I was definitely frustrated. And eventually there was a long fight for my family to jump through the hoops with different insurance companies to bring in therapy to the nursing home. And that was my saving grace. That was the only thing that saved me, was getting the therapy that I needed to move again.
So that was like they were helping you. Well, of course, you were in a wheelchair. Were they trying to help you get back up to walk and giving you some speech therapy and things like that?
I had speech, occupational, and physical therapy. And then the speech tapered off after approximately maybe 5 or 6 months, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I was back to talking again. Okay, and then the physical and occupational kept going.
Okay. And how long did you stay at the nursing home?
I was in the nursing home for approximately a year. My accident was in August, and I think I was discharged from the nursing home the next year. And I want to say it might have been a little more than a year, September of the next year.
Now, did you know at the time that you had your accident? I know everything was foggy when you woke up in the hospital, but at what point or did they? I mean, you're copping to it, but were the doctors and everyone aware? I mean, had they done a blood test and been aware that alcohol or drugs were a contributing factor to your injury?
Yes, they did do a blood test, and the amount of cocaine in my system was off the charts, I think. And so they knew right away that was what was going on.
Okay. And so when you went to the nursing home, they were focusing on the effects of your brain injury. Was there any talk at that time? Of course, you weren't probably going to be using for that year that you were in the nursing home. But how did you feel about that when you were first told that was a circumstance around your injury?
I mean, honestly, Kim, I was so frustrated with my circumstances that I wasn't focused on that. I was doing anything I could to get out of that nursing home. I think that added to my determination and drive once I could see progress of me working to get out of the nursing home.
Yeah, that'll give you a lot of determination, I suppose, when you're in those sorts of surroundings for such a long period of time. If you've got a, you know, I kind of believe that, you know, it was God's will that you live. And when you do wind up surviving something like that, I think those of us that are fortunate enough to get darn determined to change our circumstances are the ones, obviously, that fare a little better than way too many that give up when they find themselves in that circumstance. But you kept going and plugging along, doing all of the therapy that was suggested, and finally, after a year in the nursing home, you're able to talk at this point, and the therapy has progressed to what point when you finally get sprung and you've met your goal of, getting out of the nursing home, and just reminding the audience that that was where you, yes? Are you, Rick? Whoops. Looks like Rick's call dropped for just a minute. So we'll give him a chance to call back in, audience. He was Skyping, and maybe Skype dropped his call. Very unfortunate thing. It must be, well, it's terrible to wake up and to have had any kind of brain injury, a horrible trauma and shock to the system, but particularly when you find out that the proximate cause of that injury was drinking and using. Let me see here if this happens to be him calling back in on his phone. Rick, is that you?
Yes, that is me. I lost the feed, so I'm back on my phone.
Thank you. Well, that happens from time to time. That Skype drops calls right and left, so I figured that would be you calling back in. So now I'm trying to remember, being a brain injury survivor, where we were. I think it was at the point where you were at, just that obviously it took a lot of determination. You weren't a quitter, and your anger and frustration fueled you to want to get you out of that nursing home, because you had been told that's where you were going to be forever. So when you woke up from that coma and were in that fog and it had that craniotomy, you were kind of told, as I understood what I read, that that was going to be where you were going to spend the rest of your life, was in the nursing home with all the nice 80 and 90 year old people. And in a year's time, the anger and frustration and probably fear, the thought at 22 years old of living the rest of your life in that environment, I guess, lit the fire of your soul and got you very determined that you were not going to end up in the situation that the doctors had predicted. And so you worked really hard that first year in the nursing home, got through the speech therapy. And what kind of shape were you in when they finally discharged you? And I'll bet they were very surprised that somebody who was supposed to wind up being there forever was going after it with such determination that you were finally going to be able to leave.
I do believe that they were very surprised, but I think they were also probably a little happy to get rid of me at the same time, if that makes any sense.
It does. You said you were grouchy recovering, so
right.
I bet that was the case, a very angry person at that point because of the circumstances that you found yourself in and that powerlessness. At that point, you know, whatever the reason was that got you in that position, once we're in that position, we're so powerless. I found that very hard to swallow in the beginning, because I always thought that I had a lot of power and control. And when I found out that all I ever had was the illusion of control, it came as a mortal blow to me and made me very angry and frustrated as well. And I knew that there was going to have to be a profound change in my life, you know, in my case, a profound spiritual experience that was going to be able to help me navigate the rest of the way along my journey for the rest of my life, in place of going backwards and having to wind up staying in the kind of place that you were destined to be staying in.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
I don't want you to lose your point. I was just going to say, were you still in the wheelchair at the time that you left?
When I discharged, I had transitioned to a walker. And I was still with my walker. So when I was discharged from the nursing home, though, I did not go home. I went to an assisted living home for approximately 10 or 11 months.
Wow. 2 years out of your life. So It assisted care, obviously, because you were using the walker and you had other residuals from your brain injury. You were needing some assistance in your daily activities, and at least it was good to be out of the nursing home. What was assisted care like? How did that differ?
Well, assisted care gave you a little more freedom. You could come and go as you please as long as you signed yourself out and they knew where you were at. And but the good thing about assisted care was there was always someone there 24/7 to make sure that you had the care you needed.
Right. Yeah, so you'd never have a tendency to get in trouble, take a fall or something like that without somebody being fairly close to be able to find you. During any of that time, you said in the first year that you really didn't think about the drinking and using because your determination and focus at that point was to defy the prognosis, which is that you were going to be staying in a nursing home pretty much in the same shape that you entered. And now you had proved them wrong and were in assisted. At any point in this period of time or later, was your addiction relieved from you that day you got in the accident, or were you tempted again as you started healing?
Well, I have to say that I had thoughts. I don't know how tempted I was, because I knew that if I ever used again, it would take me to death. Death would be the end of my story, and I would just be another statistic.
Yeah.
But I definitely had some thoughts of drinking or using again. And the weird thing is I had some dreams that involved me partying. I don't know what that was really about, but I had dreams of me using and drinking again.
Well, I hear that's not unusual when somebody's had an addictive past to have those kind of dreams well into sobriety or not using anymore. It becomes such a part of the lifestyle that I think it kind of taunts you sometimes in your sleep. But so you're in the assisted care facility. So you were a year in a nursing home where your prognosis was that you weren't going to get better, and that's where you'd spend the rest of your days at age 22, to having the determination to fight and work those therapies to the point where you were out of a wheelchair, into a walker, and then spent the next year in an assisted care facility. And what kind of things were you just, like you say, you were free to go, but you were must have been having more therapy there, because eventually the good news is that you were able to walk unassisted at some point. Is that correct?
Well, I got very lucky because my accident was in 1998, and there was more state funding available then, and I met a guy named Tom Prescott, who changed my life. He worked for the State of Arizona Vocational Rehab Department, and Vocational Rehab had the funding back then to help brain injury survivors start all over again and begin a new life. He he had a person come and teach me how to cook, teach me how to do my laundry, teach me how to just to do simple household things like clean my house again. And after that, I transitioned to, they paid for my first college class. And I can never be thankful for enough for such great help I received from them, because Now I hear that the funding for vocational rehab is little and they're not active as they used to be.
Yeah, I sure don't hear stories like the one you just told very often, and I've been here for a couple of years, so that's, yeah, you hit it at a good time when they were being a little more attentive, I guess, and aware, and as you say, the resources were there to help you, so thank God for Mr. excuse me, Prescott, who helped you learn some of those basic daily living activities so you could get back to some semblance of independence in your life without that kind of assistance. So you said that you were about a year in the assisted care facility, and then what happened?
Well, after that, I transitioned into an apartment of my own, and we had to bring in someone to the story who's very important. Back in the nursing home, when I first was in the nursing home, a young lady knocked on my door, and she came to interview me about some activities that I would like in the nursing home, so maybe they could get me to participate, and I was upset and angry. She was asking me questions like, what is your favorite animal, and things like that, and I was upset and angry and didn't think it was relevant, and I said a couple cuss words, and I asked her to leave my room in not such a nice way, and that lady today, 15 years later, is my wife, and she was with me during that whole journey from the nursing home to the assisted living home and then to the our own apartment, where she was able to take me to the appointments I needed and to take care of me.
Amazing. What a gift that was, huh?
Yes. Without her, I honestly can't tell you where I would be.
Well, you're very fortunate in that way, as I'm sure you know. I hear a lot of stories on the show that people had a relationship, whether it was a marriage or a significant other, and when the survivor went through their brain event, if you will, you know, their significant others didn't stick with them, and yours actually found you at your worst and stayed with you through that. So that is truly a blessing and a gift. Rick, I do just want to say something to the audience real quick. For those of you that aren't regulars here, Rick and I will be talking for another 15 minutes or so, and then I'll take questions. I see some of you have your hands up, and I just, being a survivor myself and often having survivor guests, I don't take the calls as they come, or I'm afraid we'd all go off the rails. So when we're done with our interview shortly, we'll be happy to field some questions or comments for Rick. If you'll just hold tight, I'm not ignoring you guys. I just thought I'd let you know the skinny. And for any of you who are on the board who would have a question or comment for Rick, whether it's now or when we get to that point, make sure you press 1 on your dial pad so I'll be able to tell that you have a question. And again, the number is 424-243-9540 if you want to call in, 424-243-9540. And I'm here with Rick Van Linso, and we're just talking about how his addictions led to a traumatic brain injury and his fight back to discovering the new me and being able to find your voice and fit back in your skin. So now you've met your significant other and you're in your apartment. Finally, after 2 years, you're making it to an actual apartment and out of all of the assisted facilities at whatever level of care. And so now we're, what, 22, 23, 24, about 24, going on 25 years old at this point?
Right.
Okay.
I was in that age frame, and we had lived together since I was released from the assisted living facility.
Okay. And then what about your other friends and family? How did they react? How did you feel about how they reacted? Did they always seem like they were in your corner? Did any of your friends drift away after what happened? A lot of times I hear on the show that, you know, there may be people with the same problem who don't want to face it, so they avoid you. And there's others that maybe weren't that good of friends, you know, good time Charlies kind of. While you were there able to party and wear the lampshade and all that, you had a lot of really great friends. And then you go through real life, and reality can scare a lot of people away. And on the other hand, you did just talk about, and I'm sorry, what is your significant other's first name?
Her name is Keila.
Keila, okay. I'll see if I can remember that. Instead of keeping calling her the significant other, we'll say Keila. So now you have Keila in your life, and that is a gift and a blessing. You guys are together. But in that two-year period where you were in the facilities, first in the nursing home for a year and then in the assisted care for a year, How were your relationships with your friends and family? Were they the same, different? What was going on in that category?
Well, of course, a lot of my old party friends, you know, they kind of tapered off, and I didn't see very many of them during the time. I think at first, you know, some of them were kind of scared. I mean, no one ever knew if I was going to be okay again, and I'm sure that scared some people. And then we had the people that just, hey, he's not able to party anymore, so we don't have any use for him. So there was a couple, you know, groups like that. And the family members, I do have to say that a lot of my family stepped up and came in when I needed them most. My grandma was definitely a big role in that. She came down to the nursing home every week to make sure that I was being taken care of, and she would take me out to lunch. And my poor old grandma, she would hoist my wheelchair in the back of her truck to and get me in the car to take me out to lunch with her. And I will appreciate that for the rest of my life. That was some great care she gave me.
Grandmas are awesome. Sounds like you had one too. So what did you feel like when these friends reacted differently? That's a hard, I find a lot of people, you know, the whole situation of having the brain injury inside yourself is a hard thing to cope with. But then when you really find out who your friends are and aren't, for me, there was a real letdown. Kind of more of the bricks, you know, and the mortar of, oh my God, my old life is shutting down. I'm not going to be able to go backward, but I don't know what forward is yet. And that is a scary, confusing time when you know you can't go back, but you're not quite sure where forward is yet. And how did you handle that? How did you cope with rebuilding your life beyond the therapies that allowed you mobility and some of those basic skills for living, ADLs, when those things were taken care of? What kind of other things were you doing to build the new you?
Well, I think that first my wife, Keila, we weren't married at the time. We were still dating, and I always saw that her, with her, she she was different than other girls. She definitely cared for me more than anyone else ever would. And she saw the man that I am now. And even though back when I was in a wheelchair and she never knew if I would walk again, I think she saw this person that's here talking to you today. And that's just amazing, the foresight she had, because I surely couldn't tell you that I'd be standing where I'm at today. And Keila, with her determination, she was going through college at the time while she was working at the nursing home. And then she graduated college in 2002, and we got married at the same time. So we my accent was 98, so we pretty much dated for 3.5 years. From my accident to the time we became married. And Keila went to law school, and I just saw that her determination and her will for a better life for both of us was amazing, and I started going to school. Right after she started law school, I started too.
Good for you.
I started going to a local community college in my area at the time.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard for you? It had been a while since you had been in an academic environment, and I can see where it was good. You guys motivated each other. She could see something in you, and then you saw something in her, both involving a lot of drive and determination to take the action to keep moving forward all the time. How was that school experience for you? It had been a minute since you had been in a classroom in a college setting.
Well, I had taken a couple of classes with the vocational rehab when we were in Arizona. And when we married, we moved to Texas so Keila could go to law school. And so starting the classes, it was... I kind of knew how it would go, but I found a psychology class. And when I took that first psychology class and learned a little bit about human behavior, I found that I knew that's what I wanted to do. I didn't know how I wanted to do it, but I knew that I wanted to help people for the rest of my life.
Awesome. Yeah, that psych course will get it when you start reading about the intricacies of the human nature. I find that fascinating myself. Took a lot of college courses that way. So did you declare psychology to be your major then? And you went down that road because you wind up having a couple of credentials behind your name. So from starting in those first couple classes and taking them, did you find your processing, your ability to comprehend and remember? Like, do you have memory problems? When you went back to school, I just wondered if you found it different, the amount of information that you could retain, how quickly you could process.
Yes, I definitely learned that I was not the same person as I used to be, and I had to carry a pen and pencil with me wherever I went. And if I wanted to remember it, the rule was I had to write it down, and I had to stop being lazy and trying to remember things and then, you know, get home and realize that I forget it. So I had to write everything down. And still to this day, I write down pretty much everything that I need to remember. But luckily today, we have iPads and iPhones and things with little notes in them. You can just write yourself a little note, and that helps.
Yeah, if you remember to go to it, it helps. I still say I have a smartphone that's a lot smarter than me because I know it's got some functions that are probably really helpful, but... I don't know how to use them yet, so I'm still leaving myself lots of notes all over the place. So the studying was a little harder, but it sounds like from your character, obviously you didn't let that stop you. But the other thing I think is interesting is you never made excuses, and you never just said, okay, I can't remember things, so I'm just not going to do anything that I have to remember. You just seemed to naturally adapt to the fact that you'd start, well, here's a challenge and here's an answer. I need to take notes of things that I need to remember. You didn't seem to let it stop you from your desire to move forward, even though it was different and it was difficult and more challenging than it had been in your past. You didn't seem to let that dissuade you from your forward momentum. That couldn't have always been easy.
No, and I agree that, you know, I had a forward state of mind, but at the same time, I was still very angry and frustrated with life because I wasn't the complete new me that I am now. I was this guy who was recovering from an injury, and I had to start, you know, back at work. I started working at a retail store while I was going to school, and in the first year, they would definitely find me on the stockroom floor laying on the ground because I had lost my balance. I didn't have my balance back. I was not allowed on ladders, and I was still a little frustrated and angry. So there was definitely an overtone of my addictive behavior that I haven't got rid of yet. And so it took me several years to realize that I needed to leave that junk behind to move on and create a new life.
Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask you about that is that you realized, and this is something a lot of people don't realize, but when you have prolonged anger, it kind of tends to alienate you from from people around you that are close to you, whether they be friends or lovers or family members or whoever they are. Angry people aren't real fun to be around and don't always seem like the most stable kind of people. So, you know, your brain and determination was getting you back into school. What started to soften your attitude and change you into the person you are today? Because you did go on, as I said, to get a master's in social work and the CPC. So you kept going in academia and now have become a life coach. And I want to remind everybody that Rick's website is www.rejuvenatelifecoaching.com. So you're obviously in school and it's harder, but you're moving forward. You're collecting these academic credentials. And isn't it an interesting irony that you were in psychology class, yet you were somewhat, I say affectionately because I've been there, a psych case while you were going through the psychology courses because you had this anger that you hadn't worked through that was permeating your being. When did that change and how did that start to soften for you?
Well, I found my higher power and found religion. And I had a man walk up to me and tell me he loved me, and I haven't heard that in many years. And it definitely put a softening on my heart.
A random man?
No, I was a pastor of the church that I was attending at the time. I didn't know if I was allowed to mention names or anything like that, but I remember from now it changed my whole being.
So was that kind of like a spiritual experience for you? Just because a lot of people could hear those words out of someone's mouth, and it might not mean as much or be a game-changing event, but apparently you were in a place of readiness to have something fill that void, to be able to let go, just like you let go of your addictions, you got that willingness to let go of addictions, you got a willingness to let go of some of that anger and rage you were living in for about 3 years. And so for this one man to make that one comment seems a lot like the spiritual experience that you might have been looking for when you started to go back to church. Had you been a big church goer before?
I was, when I attended church before, it was usually for a holiday event with family members, and that was pretty much it. So
that's what I always say. My God came out at Christmas and Easter.
I agree. And when me and my wife started going to church together, I think that became a whole new experience for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a good experience, because when you can be spiritually bound, at least, you know, when I found individually that when I rely completely on my own power and I push the envelope, I fold like a house of cards. So I personally, and I'm not preaching to anybody out in the audience, but I personally need to have a higher power in my life, who I choose to call God, and it's a belief system that when I'm not when I feel like I'm not enough, or I'm ready to throw in the towel, I'm able to get cues like the cue that you got from that man. My ears and heart have to be open for it. But once my ears and heart got open for it, I was able to find those cues all over. They had probably been going on around me all my life, and that was the angels or whatever. That was the reason I was still alive after all of the things that I had done, that I would have deserved to be dead 50 times over, you know. But there was something stronger than me, helping me keep my life force, and then not just wanting me to be alive, but wanting me to thrive as a testament of that and higher power. So this started, you embarked on kind of a spiritual experience then. That set a trigger in you that you were going to devote yourself or at least rechannel your attention toward more spirituality and faith in your life, and that was going to help you be the new you, give you the tools that you needed?
That definitely was something that along the way changed my path. I still had the addictive behavior and the hardened heart, and it definitely softened my heart and let me learn how to serve others and be kind to other people and pay it forward and things like that. And like I say, I definitely, the experience was something that I do not regret.
So was there a time that you were angry ever in the time that you were angry and full of rage? Is God one of the, were you ever angry at God for you being in the situation you were in?
I'm not too sure I was angry at God for what had happened to me. I think that I was more thankful to God for giving me a second chance. And let me have a chance to prove myself again that I could be a productive citizen.
Yeah, a sower of love and not chaos, I think,
right,
to make the world a better place. And I think you know, from what I've read of your stuff, you know, and what I hear from hosts on here and guests on here is that, you know, they got a new sense of purpose delivered vis-a-vis their brain injury. Some people are still angry and resentful about it, obviously, and others of us were maybe at first grudgingly grateful that we were going to get a second chance. But once we realized this wasn't a dress rehearsal and we were on stage now and it can be taken away at any moment, really got an overwhelming sense of service and gratitude and wanting to pay back and help others who maybe are walking in similar moccasins to know that there is hope. And there is good reason to continue having faith because you're a miracle. When you read, you know, when you read your story, and tell them your Facebook page where I found you again, and I'll see if I can't type it into the chat room at the same time because Rick tells his story. You've heard some of it tonight. He is on the East Coast. I want to give anybody an opportunity to ask any questions or if you have any comments, but let me read something that's on his site, and then I'm going to have him tell you where that is. But Rick says, "I am the creator of the group and welcome each and every one of you. Remember to take a look at the group rules. Remember, addiction is our stumbling block, and our actions during recovery are what determine our future. This group was created to hear your voice. We each have a story and a voice, and it empowers and heals us to share our past hurts, habits, or hang-ups. This is how I earned my clean and sober voice. I was 22 years old. I was hooked on drugs and alcohol. I wanted help, but I did not know how to get it. I kept doing what I knew best, and that was to get drunk and high. One night after partying with my friends, I was dropped off at home and in a blackout, ended up on a hill that surrounded my apartment complex. I rolled to the bottom, flopping off of a retaining wall and smashing my head onto the pavement. I was rushed to the hospital and had a right frontal craniotomy." He talks about, again, after surgery, being in a coma for several weeks. And when he woke up, spending about a year in a nursing home where he was, the prognosis is that he was going to be there for the rest of his life, but and didn't have mobility, was in a wheelchair, surrounded by the elderly at age 22, thinking that was going to be his lot in life. That's what the medical model told him at the time. And then spent an additional year in a rehab facility, and all that time really fighting an anger, a deep anger and resentment, and probably not a real easy guy to be around sometimes. But Rick goes on in his Facebook page, "With determination, hard work, and focus, I left the nursing home in my wheelchair for a walker and eventually a cane. After 3 years of therapy, I was walking with no assisted device. In the 15 years since my accident, I've been able to walk, talk, and drive again. I went to college and earned an undergraduate degree in psychology and graduate degree in counseling and psychology. And he has dedicated his life to helping others who have experienced trauma, injury, or addiction. And he now has over 15 years of not using any illicit chemicals. So congratulations on your 15 years of sobriety." And then on this page, he has pictures of him before and after his accident and now, so you can kind of see Rick's before, during, and after. And again, his Facebook page, but this is not the one I met you on. You got to help me figure out the other one, but www.facebook.com/ Rejuvenate Life Coaching. And he also has a website by the same name, www.cleanandsobervoice.com. That's for people who have had or feel they have a substance abuse problem. That last one I read, but certainly the rejuvenating life coach portion is for everybody in recovery. So my last question, and then I'm going to let you recap with anything that you would like to mention, is so you started this growth, you had a pivotal time and linked spirituality and recovery and staying away from substances that might block the light of the spirit that was actually illuminating your new path. You took these classes, got your academic credentials, married this woman who is an angel. You know, your wife is definitely a good woman, you know, a very unselfish, good woman. And you guys have been good for each other, I can tell. And you wanted to help. You wanted to be able to get that help. And so what did you, when did you decide to start your page and get into the coaching aspect and take it that step further from getting the education to actually moving into not just meetings or a church group necessarily as a means of offering support to others, but actually went a step further to become a rejuvenating life coach? Where did that come from?
In January of 2014, my wife and I moved to a new state, and the counseling laws in the previous state I was in before, I could counsel and long as I was supervised by somebody. But in my new state, I couldn't counsel at all, and I missed having that interaction with clients. And so I found that life coaching was the way to give me that interaction with those clients and for me to be able to help them on a one-on-one basis.
Great. And so how's that going for you?
That's going awesome. I went and got my life coaching certification. So I am the CPC means I'm a certified professional coach. I work in a brain injury rehabilitation facility, and I life coach all the residents and help them with their therapy and have fun while we're doing it.
Well, yeah, that's great. That's just wonderful. And it looks like you've got a lot of people that participate in your group. So there's a lot of people around that are searching for some kind of support out there or a place that they can be honest. We like to think that Brain Injury Radio is that way. We do have a peer support line. You can check out the website, the number 4, peer, P-E-E-R, 11.org, and that will give you instructions about a one-on-one 24/7 call service where one survivor can talk to another. And, of course, Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and all of these live shows are immediately archived for free on-demand listening, so you never need to be alone in your recovery. And, Rick, is there anything you'd like to say before I take a couple of the questions that are up here on the board? I know it's getting late for you in your neck of the woods.
Oh, no problem. I just wanted to clarify that the page that I think that we touched base on initially was called Clean and Sober Voice. It's on Facebook. It's www.facebook.com/groups/ Clean and Sober Voice.
And I'm just writing that, if I could spell groups/ I'm sorry, say again, Clean and Sober Voice.
Yes.
Clean and Sober. So facebook.com/groups/cleanandsober
Voice. Yes.
Got it. Okay, we got that in the chat room for anybody. And I wanted to repeat it slower because everybody doesn't always have a pen right next to them. But that is where I met you the first time, is I wanted to check out. And I had also, I think, seen some of your pictures or read your story. I knew that you had had a traumatic brain injury and that it was as a result of drinking and using, something that happened in a blackout. And the complete and total 180, you know, you've done with your life, and starting from such a adverse place and growing to the point that you have, really shows, like I said, your strength of character and your strong faith and hope. And so I commend you for all that you've been able to accomplish with these really dire circumstances that you started out with. But if you don't mind, I will open a line and we'll see if someone has a question or comment. Area code 518, you're on the line. Who do we have?
Hi, Kim. It's Tammy. How are you?
Good, Tammy. How are you doing? Meet Rick.
Oh, Rick, I got to tell you, you told my story, man.
Well, hi, Tammy.
A lot of the same things. What a great, great topic, and what a great conversation you guys just shared with us. I'm so blessed.
Thank you very much.
Now I want to be you when I grow up, though.
Well, it just takes keep plugging along at it, huh, Rick? You just kind of keep plugging along and moving forward. It's so easy to let life speed bumps derail us sometimes, and if it was just me, my sheer will, I would have quit a couple times along the way, or reverted to old behavior, or any number of bleak circumstances. But I completely credit, well, my I use acronyms a lot on the show, and HOW is one of them: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I need to have that all the time, because the minute I think I'm back in charge is the minute that things start going off the rails, and then I can't control it and I'm powerless over it, and that causes agitation and that raises the blood pressure, and that, these days, now that I'm a little older, wears me out. But in the old days, it sent me on the warpath. And, you know, it's a shame when people who have a brain injury are fighting that intense anger and impulse control, and go out and they don't practice damage control. They're out there like the tornado rowing through people's lives and upsetting about every apple cart in the neighborhood. And then normally guilt and remorse will set in, and then self-loathing, and it's a very sick, perverse circle, you know, that this whole thing goes in. And to be able to break the cycle, you know, whether it's a burning bush type spiritual experience or the kind of spiritual experience that Rick was talking about, where someone telling him he loved him resonated so loud, probably because he didn't feel, I don't want to speak for you, but for me, when I heard that once, it was because I felt I was so undeserving of hearing those words. I hadn't heard him in forever. I thought I wasn't lovable. I didn't love me. And I guess I was a little shocked and taken back that someone else would say that they did, who didn't have a payback out of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
They didn't have something to get out of it. They said it from their heart to my heart, and it touched my soul. And I just think those are amazing gifts.
You know, it took me a long time to learn to read again, and I still don't read really well, but easy reads are very helpful to me. And I stumbled upon a book by a woman who also is in recovery several years ago, by a woman named Sherry Huber. It's about that cycle of self-hatred and self-loathing. It's called There's Nothing Wrong With You, No Matter What You Were Taught to Believe, and it's about stopping that cycle of abuse. And, you know, when you use and you use and you use, you fuel the anger against yourself. You punish yourself for using by using again. and you treat yourself for abstinence by using, it's crazy, you know?
Yeah, it really is.
Now I'm inspired to get back in school. I did 3 great semesters, and then I pooped out, and I'm getting more motivated again to try to get into that social work program I was in. I only have 5 classes left, and a practice
good for
and
you.
I could have the start of it.
Good for you.
Yay, Tammy. Good for you. Yeah, let Rick be your guide there. I went in on to go do some different things that weren't in my plan, but as far as yours and Rick's lining up, keep going. You know, this has been, I think every time we, to me, I kind of think of it like a brick wall. You know, you get that brain injury and it's like something just hit the brick wall and the brick's scattered. And you got to start building them back one by one, by one, by one, by one, by one. Some days slower than others to get it back together, to get the structure, foundation, and back together again. And I think each one of those, and we lose our self-esteem at that point, and I think
right.
a lot of times. And the way that we get our self-esteem back is by, it doesn't have to be becoming president, well, especially becoming president, wait, let me qualify that. It doesn't have to mean being an astronaut or something that, you know, sometimes it's the little things, the stopping to listen to someone you see is hurting, you know, to offer to open the door for the little old lady to be out of ourselves and try to be of service to others and to actually dedicate our lives to doing so. But I think that, you know, those classes, geez, with only 5 left, girl, you got to go back and finish that up.
I know. I have a student loan. That's my only hurdle right now. I don't call it an obstacle because it's just a hurdle that I have to get over. It's not going to stop me, that's for sure.
Good attitude.
You know, I really have this, I've had that spiritual experience, that spiritual awakening where I'm able to see things and credit things in such a different way. Somebody said to me, you have really mastered the art of independent living. I said, I don't live independently. I live with my God, and that's how I live. Under the direction of God. And when you said about the self-esteem, I was taught by a very wise woman, if you want to build your self-esteem, do many, many, many esteemable acts over and over and over again. Look
very
for opportunities
good.
To serve God and the rest of the world instead of yourself.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very good. Rick, I know that you're, Tammy, I'm going to come back to you. Thank you so much. I have a bad habit of telling these East Coast guests that I'll just keep them an hour, and when we're creeping to an hour and a half, and I say this every time I do it, I tell people about an hour, but I'm blessed, Rick, just to have some really fabulous guests like yourself that other people are very interested in. So I'm going to see who's at area code 253, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Kim Justice. This is Tommy Manning.
Hi, Tommy. How are you?
I'm surviving.
Hi,
like
Tommy. How are you doing?
Rick, I give a lot of credit to you.
Thank
I
you.
I wish I could have your name. But I also built a name for myself. And it brought forward the Traumatic Brain Injury Strategic Partnership Advisory Council. And it brought on a conference that goes on once a year for 2 days at a time. But like you, I went through a similar experience. It was not as drawn out as your experience, but I had been in Western State Hospital. I'd been in jail, arrested over something stupid and thrown by behind bars and without medication, okay, I was left in behind bars. I lost my mind. I was sent to Western State Hospital, and I was totally abused out there until my family of brain injury support group leaders and everything found where I was, and they got me out of there, Western State, and I went through to a more or less a nursing home setting with old people and young people and middle-aged people, and okay, that wasn't good enough for me.
Hey, Tommy, just a second. I don't want to cut you off in the middle of your story, but I promised Rick that he'd be able to be off by what is 11:30 his time, because he's got a really early morning meeting. So I was just going to take any quick questions or comments before Rick, and then I've got to let him go. But we'll be coming back on the line. I just, when I'm out looking for guests and I promise them an hour and I drag it into a half hour, I'm afraid they won't want to come back. So if I can get you to hang on for just a moment, I will bring you back. I will bring you back. Okay, and Tommy, thank you for calling in. I know lots of parts of your story and appreciate you listening. And yes, you've been through hell on wheels too, and I hope you can hear people like Rick and keep doing what you've been doing to move forward, because Tommy has also faced huge adversity and been instrumental in getting some legislation passed and being a very forward mover as well. So, okay, anybody else have any question or comment? 424-243-9540. Otherwise, I will honor my promise as close as I can. We're right upon 11:30 your time. And just thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And I encourage any of you with my guests, and like I said, I'm blessed to get some wonderful guests, and I would keep them on all night if I could. But what I'm basically doing is introducing you to some people who give you every reason to have hope and faith, no matter how far down the scale your life has gone or whatever negative experiences you've had in your life, and ways that the show's called Recovery Now. That doesn't mean right now. That means a process, a change of psyche that you don't do perfect, but you've chosen a path that you're going to walk down consistently with the help of others by being in service to others. And Rick has been a really great example of that. I appreciate your honesty, you know, first of all, about coming out and saying that it was of your doing, not the disease of alcohol or drugs, but that unfortunately one of the things that changed your life forever was in back of using. And I suppose there was a lot of feelings to get through where that was concerned, but you certainly did, I think, what was meant to be the end game, and that's to change, you know, to turn your life around and use your experience to help others, and that certainly seems to be what you're doing. So I encourage you guys to check out Rick's website at rejuvenatelifecoaching.com. Or if you want to say hi to him on Facebook and thank him for being here tonight, or have one of those more lengthy conversations at facebook.com, again, /rejuvenate life coaching. Is there any last thing you would like to say, and then I'll let you get to bed? I really appreciate you being here tonight. I know that you wound up having a very early meeting that you have to go to tomorrow, and even thank you for taking a nap for being on the show tonight. That means a lot to me that it would mean that much to you to come to the show, that you did what you needed to do. I took a nap too, by the way. I was rode hard and put up wet today, so we were able to show up, and hopefully the audience out there was able to benefit from your story, and I appreciate your candor and sharing it with us tonight.
I thank you, Kim, for being such a great host and having me tonight. It was my pleasure. I thank Tommy and Tammy for calling in. It was great to hear from them. And again, check out my links or my groups, and we can connect that way. I appreciate everything.
Okay, well, good night to you, and congratulations to you and your wife, and continued success, and I hope you'll stay in touch and come back again sometime soon.
I sure will. Thank you very much.
You bet, Rick. Bye. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, everybody, that was Rick Von Linzo, Masters of Social Work and a certified counselor. I'm going to give us just a moment. This is something he said in his reading earlier, and one of our indie artists. I'm going to give you 4 minutes to take a breath, go get a green tea like I'm going to do real quick, and then we'll come back, have some open mic and indie music. But this one I will send out to Rick, and it's Daniel Christian's Find My Voice, something we all have to do in this journey, sometimes repeatedly.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Maybe we all have a role to play. Maybe this is my inauguration. Until I speak. finally getting used to my own skin. I never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. And now is the time to find my
Daniel Christian, and I check him out at danielchristian.com, or if you're on Facebook, facebook.com/Daniel Christian, and he is a really great guy. I have the pleasure of having met him and been knowing him a little bit to be a fan and go listen to Daniel play, and he's a solid, definitely a solid. Today, speaking of humanness, which Rick was talking about, and I guess the final thing I'll say about Rick is I really appreciate, as I said, his candor and honesty as to the way he got his brain injury. He didn't apparently feel, well, you know, a lot of things go into anger that get exhibited in anger anyway. Fear is one of them. Huge. When you don't feel fear, sometimes you channel that as anger, powerlessness, frustration. So many things, you know, go into that. And all I know is that it's heartwarming to see somebody who, God, can you imagine getting sentenced to a nursing home for the rest of your life at age 22 and the road he's traveled to get where he's gone? Just incredible. So again, brain injuries and illicit drugs, drinking to excess, the cause of a lot of brain injuries. We can have a lot of helmet laws and stuff that help with brain injuries, but we need to pass the word about addictions and self-medicating when it comes to our brain injuries, because that can be the thing that finishes off the rest of our brain or our life if we're not careful, which is not to say we don't practice medicine here at Brain Injury Radio. There's people that do need to be on medication. What you have to be careful of is if you've got an addictive personality, to not abuse that medication, and that if you do, seek help as quickly as you can. Even though shutting down those feelings is tempting when they're unbearable, shutting it down so you just don't have to feel that anymore is a tempting proposition. Unfortunately, for the true addict or alcoholic, that changes at a point and it winds up biting you in the butt. It doesn't give you that relief you were looking for. It actually gives you more problems to deal with, and you've still got the old ones too. So be careful. And if you have a friend you think is in that situation, you can't make anybody do something they don't want to do, but you can certainly plant the seed of recovery. And that's what we're trying to do here on Brain Injury Radio, plant the seed of recovery. And Rick is doing that as well. So I hope you'll check out his website. Today, some of you know I'm in the process of a move, and today was a very bad, stressful day. It's been hard, you know, for the last month trying to get one house ready to show and selling it by owner and getting a new house that was going to need a fixer-upper, and a really bad fixer-upper problem surfaced today that really kind of unraveled me. And I had to leave the house for 3 hours and let strangers in my house today to do an inspection. And I still don't know. I don't know that there's anything wrong, but safety laws are changing all the time. Who knows? I got no idea how that turned out. I suppose I'll hear from my buyer. I was very blessed that I sold my house in 4 days, but right now we have two. And a big problem came today. It seemed like my phone didn't stop ringing all day. And I got a brain injury slowing me up a little anyway. And at one point, it was too much for me. I was standing in that house listening to all that pound, and I'm not even living there. We did it smart this way because we did a remodel of a bathroom once in our home, and it just about took me over the cliff. And so we were going to give it a few weeks for them to finish the work they were doing in our new house, and this big problem going to probably be real expensive emerged today. And I was nervous anyway about this inspection going on at my house and overwhelmed. You know, I get overwhelmed a lot easier than I did before my brain injury, and I just burst into tears. But where I did it was away from one group of workmen, and it was with someone, and I looked him in the eye and I just started to cry. And he knew. You know, Rick was talking earlier about someone who knew the right thing to say at the right time. And John looked at me in the eye, and when the tears started falling, he hugged me. And you guys don't know John is my painter. That's what he was doing today, was finishing painting my bedroom and starting to paint the roof. But you know him this way, and this is the John I loved from the first time I heard him 15, 16, 18 years ago to today, when a little bit later we were singing this together on my living room floor with my iPad and my little portable Bose. But this is John Cruz with Palm of Your Hand.
Your dreams.
John Cruz. Be sure to check him out at John Cruz, C-R-E-W-S, johncruzblues.com or facebook.com/johncruzblues. Or if you want to listen to more of his music or perhaps buy it, help a guy out, you can go to reverbnation.com/johncruzblues. As long as you remember those three words. For those of you that don't know, I met John 15, like I said, 15, 20 years ago. And when I became a host on this show and was looking for indie music, I sought out to find him. We went our separate ways, like a lot of people do. Found him, and he was happy to let me play this old music of his that he made, and knew I had a radio show, didn't know what it was about, just knew I was looking for music. And when I told him what it was, we were both silent for a moment, and he informed me that shortly before that, before my call, he had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. And so John is at the beginning. He went through 28 he was supposed to go through 28 radiation treatments, and that wasn't in hopes of getting rid of the tumor. It was in hopes of slowing its growth. And he got to 25 and said, if 25 didn't do it, 28 ain't gonna, I'm done. And hasn't had those treatments. Still painting, but ringing up a lot of medical bills for the problems that are following him. But hell of a painter and hell of a singer. Last Friday I crawled into a place, got to watch him live. And for any of you that are friends of mine on Facebook, either personally or on my In a Flash page, I did post two videos that I did of John actually performing one of his own songs, which most all of them I play are his, except for one or two. But anyway, one of his songs is Sweet Tennessee, and that is on my In a Flash page, and the other on my personal page. And if you guys are interested and you can't find those,
hey folks, not sure if you can hear me now or not, but this must be a bad night for Skype. We lost our guest in the beginning of the show, and I lost my Skype call, and hopefully you guys are still out there and can hear me now. I just called back in. The Skype seems to be inoperable, so I don't recommend you going that way. Unless I hit your, somebody froze up the chat room as well. They say that's reconnecting to the server, and your little wheel, I'm trying to unmute your mic, is just spinning and spinning and spinning. So it appears we're having a technical malfunction. What I'll try to do while here, maybe I will try to refresh. Wow, unable. Well, let me see if I can unmute someone else and see if they're going to spin just like Les does. Uh-oh, Tammy, 518, Tommy, 253, I've tried to unmute all of your mics, and they're just spinning and spinning and spinning, so I'm not at all sure what happened. It looks like we've had a problem, in any case. So, you guys, I can unmute your mics. Don't know if you guys are still able to hear because the chat room got obliterated in this too. So apparently, before I give up and call it a show, I'm going to try one more thing, if you bear with me. I'll see if I can put on a song maybe and see if that will play. And if not, then like I said, I'm not really sure if you guys are even hearing me, and I can't get you, you guys' mics are all spinning, just not picking up. So let me see what I can do, and if I can't fix this in the next 5 minutes, then I'll have to thank you all for coming and say that Brain Injury Radio appreciates the support
as do I. And let me try a song, and maybe I'm getting a text here from the technical department. Hang on. It's weird. Somebody sent me something, but I'm not able to find it on my I called in on my phone to the show because the Skype didn't work. So refreshing is not helping this problem. So I'm not really sure what we can do. I closed the chat, and let's see, did I try to play another song while I figure this out to entertain you or not? Let's try it and see. This is, well, let me see which one of these I'll try. It'll probably just be spinning and spinning and spinning too, but maybe that will give me time to reboot and come in. So if you guys are able to be patient for a moment, I'll see what I can do. Thanks. My...
Hello, Kim. This is Les Paul. I hope someone can hear me. She's having some technical difficulties, and I heard my phone just unmute. I'm hoping people are able to hear me, and I'm just holding on for her while she's trying to get it going again. Kim's had a great show. She's been very tired also. She's been very busy. Us people with brain injury, we're not invincible, we've discovered. We can get overwhelmed, overrun, and but we can make it. That's the thing. Us working together as team work.
Hi, Les. I'm so glad I was able to get you unmuted. Right when that Skype thing went away, my internet connection got dropped, and I had all of your wheels going, trying to let one of you get the mic to try to save the show.
That's what happened to me last night. For 21 minutes, I lost everything.
Yeah, it looks like I've lost the chat room, folks. So, anyway, chat room appears to be gone, but we got a couple people left. Most of the people dropped off. We had a full board. Most of the people dropped off in that crisis, and I don't blame them.
Would you
sometimes
like me to see if I can log in and do anything?
Well, I'm logged in, but, I mean, you're... certainly
as a co-host
welcome,
or something like that.
Sure, that'd be great because if you did that, well, I'm afraid to lose you though because
I know.
Well, if people can hear me, I guess I could put on a song or something. But while you tried to do that, but somebody might have to take. I either have to end this or somebody else will have to take the controls, and I can just try calling in because now my whole studio's gone and the chat room. So I got nothing. I couldn't mute you, unmute you.
You were doing fine, and the sound never changed except when it suddenly went away and then it came back. And you were saying you couldn't see anything, but we could still hear you. You lost sound for about 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't even sure. That was so weird because I couldn't unmute anybody to let them know that's what was going on. But anyway, I'll see if I can. Okay. I guess we're not going to have a chat room tonight. But let me see. I guess Tammy left. I think we have Alan maybe with us tonight. Except now he's spinning and spinning and spinning. Alan, I'm trying to get you on, but the studio is malfunctioning. I must have got Les Paul under the wire before.
Now is a good time to mention braininjuryradio.org because this is why we need braininjuryradio.org. It's better.
Yes, it is. Our new studio system. I encourage all of you to go to braininjuryradio.org. Some of you have been aware of the fact that we're going to be switching studios. We've been, for the last number of years, broadcasting from Blog Talk Radio, which seems to have a lot of foibles and technical issues. And Craig worked hard to build a new studio system that looks a lot like Blog Talk Radio, but it's at braininjuryradio.org. And I encourage you to go there and open an account, get a username and password, because as we host, start filtering over there, you're still going to see us posting our shows all over the place, and you can listen to them from all the places that they stream from. But just check out the braininjuryradio.org site, get a username and password. You'll be able to listen to the shows from there, and we'll still be broadcasting to Blog Talk, but not from Blog Talk, so hopefully we won't have to put up with this nonsense. I'm really grateful that my guest got out, at least. You know, we had a good interview, and it didn't screw up until he was over, if it was going to. So